This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the Manny Fry Show. Ryan and Brad and Ethan in the studio. Ethan kind of halfway in the studio. We are watching the chat and your response to the question of the day, which is, do you feel safe in 2025? I'm feeling safer. I'm feeling less safe. I feel about the same. I think overall, we're kind of, you know, angling toward crime and, you know, the idea of political violence, especially in light of the Josh Shapiro arson case today, but also all of the violence that we're seeing on a regular basis. Do you feel safe in 2025? You can interpret that question however you like, but that's how I'm interpreting it. People asking that question in the chat, also referencing some of the new shows that Brad and I were just talking about in the break. Black Mirror is back. There's a lot of shows that are bringing back more seasons right now that I'm very excited about. I haven't seen Severance yet. Everybody's talking about that one yet. I've seen the first season, but not the second. And then Squid Game, we're kind of in the middle of right now.
Are they doing another Squid Game?
I don't know if they're doing a third season or not.
They've done two seasons.
Okay. Yeah, we're in the middle of the second season. But it's subtitles, so you got to watch. You got to watch it.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it subbed or dubbed? Because I know that they make it in Korea, right?
It's subtitled, but the first season was great, and there is a charm to subtitles that forces you to watch the show more. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. Put your phone down, watch the show. I got to tell myself that pretty often. But it's also more work.
Yeah.
And unless the show is really good, it's work I'm usually not willing to take. But one of the shows that is still airing live, so not on streaming, I guess you can get it on Peacock. But I've tried watching I did this segment a while ago on my show on the weekends that I was going to start watching all the old Saturday Night Lives because they have them on Peacock back to the beginning.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm like, oh, okay, you could watch the originals, except they have all the originals on DVD. Like the first five seasons with that original cast are all on DVD. So I didn't really need to watch those because I'd seen most of them. But then starting when Dick Ebersol took over and Lorne Michaels and that original cast left, I hadn't really seen anything during the Eddie Murphy era, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I would like to see what the show was like. And I started watching it in that stage. There must be rights issues on Peacock with streaming because you'll turn an episode on and a lot of times it'll be monologue, one sketch, over. And you're like, why even put the episode up?
Yeah, no
there's
kidding.
Not anything in this. And Weekend Update. They must have the rights to Weekend Update.
It's just like a hit and miss then. So some they'll have the whole rights or?
Some episodes you'll have most of the sketches, but not all of them. Almost none of them have the musical act. But they almost always have monologue and Weekend Update and then a sketch. So I don't know if it's they got to get the host's rights to stream them or there are certain cast members that never gave the rights to stream and they can only use certain sketches without those cast members. I don't know what it is, but it was really disappointing because I was wanting to watch the kind of the what they call the crappiest era of Saturday Night Live, where you had all these random stars like Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Robert Downey Jr. on the show, and they just get completely lost because they're in that era.
Yeah.
And then Lorne Michaels comes back in, I think, 1986, and the show starts to resemble what you know to be Saturday Night Live again, because it was just weird there for a while. Mm-hmm. And it gets back into a flow, and it gets better. Well, you can't really watch it, though, because you can watch just what they have. So it's been really disappointing because I did this whole segment where I'm going to watch every episode. I'm going to report to you back how good they are, when the cast members joined and did all this. And it was like, this is a complete waste of time. You can't even watch them. But I think all the new ones, they know going into it that they have to have streaming rights. So you can watch the new episodes. But is anybody watching Saturday Night Live live anymore? Or are we just watching it in clips?
I mean, I don't.
I don't either. Maybe somebody is. It's a legacy show for sure.
Is it getting better?
They're trying in some ways, but they can't resist taking shots at Trump because it's so easy and it does get attention.
Shots at Trump are okay provided they're in good spirit.
They're usually, I can't say they're usually not. Some of them are okay in the last few months.
Yeah.
But not all of them. And unfortunately, I saw one sketch last night, not last night, but over the weekend, that was pretty good. And it was social commentary, but it wasn't about Trump. And I was like, so we pulled that. I'll play that in a minute. But after I saw that one, I thought, they really did a pretty good job here. That's making fun of everybody. Then I saw that they did this weekend a big production. So this was not Saturday Night Live. This was Saturday Night recorded.
Okay.
Jon Hamm was the host. And they had to have done this either really fast or they had to have had Jon Hamm involved before he was this week because it is slick. If you've ever seen the show White Lotus, it was a parody of that show. Now, full disclosure, I have never seen White Lotus. Whenever people talk about a show being great, I usually get to it. I just don't get to it very quickly. Eventually,
you're a little hesitant.
I'll just come to it when in my own time. and with a show like that, I'm like, we'll see. I'm not really big into drama. I like comedy. I like sci-fi.
Do you know the premise of White
Lotus? I don't really know much about it. I know what it looks like because I've seen clips of it, but I don't really know what it's about.
Okay.
So they did a parody of White Lotus, and they called it White POTUS, which the title itself, that's kind of funny. But the problem is, I watched this whole thing. It's over 5 minutes long, and it just takes shots at Trump and everybody who's in the news in Trump world. And that's okay if it's funny. Now, they're not doing it in good faith, but as long as it's funny, then I can kind of get by with it. The problem is, I really did try to find the jokes in it to play for you when they, because they bring up different characters over and over. Oh, here's Eric Trump. Here's Don Jr. Here's Howard Lutnick. And they'd just have a brief appearance and they'd kind of do their little joke and then they'd move on like it was a trailer for the show. But the problem is that I really couldn't find jokes. And that's what's disappointing. So I'm going to play for you every single character they parodied. And you can tell me if you can find the joke.
Okay.
Here's the first one. Pam Bondi.
But I couldn't do it without you, Pam Bondi. You're the attorney general.
And I've been told that generally, everything I'm doing is illegal.
That's it. It's not really a joke. It's just a shot. It's a political shot.
I mean, it's not even like a caricature or anything like that.
I mean, they dress him up to look kind of like him. And the shots look like White Lotus. But that's not a joke. That's just saying, what we think what she's doing is illegal. Okay. You're Saturday Night Live. You're not Jon Stewart. Here's RFK.
I mean, it's like I have all these crazy ideas, you know. I have this syringe full of active measles virus, and I just want to stab somebody with it, you know. And I've been having these insane ideas, like what if we took all the fluoride out of the drinking water? But what would that do to people's teeth?
Is it That's the joke?
Yeah.
You're just saying things that you don't like.
Yeah.
You're not making up jokes. And he's dressed like a character. And so you're like, oh, that's the joke. I'm missing it. Howard Lutnick.
Oh, and your Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick is sitting over there. Says he wants to watch America get bent over and railed by other countries.
You know, some people are just weird.
Howard Lutnick, he wants to watch America get bent and railed by other countries. That's it. Howard Lutnick doesn't even speak in the sketch.
There has to be something like that we're missing with the White Lotus
there
show.
There has to be. But it's just, if it's just parody, then you'd still add some humor. This isn't humor. I mean, it's right. Just taking characters out of politics and putting them in White Lotus and just saying, here's what I don't like about you. That's not really a sketch. I hate to say it. Marco Rubio and Vladimir Putin.
Can I cheer you up?
Vladimir Putin?
You look sad. Come. Dance with me.
Okay.
I guess it's kind of funny because Vladimir Putin is wearing like big gold chains and he's very sexual, which is a little weird. And then, of course, Trump and Putin also.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to put a 500% tariff on China.
No.
Hey, what's the matter, baby?
Vladimir, I think we're all having weird dreams.
It's just like Trump's is Putin's puppet, you know. The impersonation's pretty good, but it's not a joke. Last couple, Eric and Don Jr. This is the only one that was an attempt at a joke, in my opinion.
Here, why don't you make your own? It's about time.
Okay.
Buddy, did you just blend your gold Rolex?
You said it was about time.
Right.
Okay, that's not a good joke, but it's a joke. And the last one. The best for last, Melania Trump. Now, you'd think Melania, you know what she sounds like. She definitely doesn't sound like she's Southern, so maybe there's something with White Lotus there that I'm missing, but I'm not sure why. Again, if it's just parody, that's one thing, but then you add script. You add jokes, and here is Melania Trump.
I mean, we are so lucky that America will always be a rich and powerful nation. I mean, can you imagine how awful it would be if America lost all its money and no one in the world respected us anymore?
So they have her talk like she's Southern, which I'm like, well, maybe there's a parody thing that I'm missing
maybe.
There. But again, there wasn't really any jokes. The only thing on SNL that I saw this weekend that I was like, oh, that's actually pretty funny. Like, it's skewering the whole culture around what you can talk about, what you can't talk about, was that Jon Hamm played one half of a gay couple in a sketch where everybody was asking about their baby. And it was legitimately funny. And I don't want to just be like, oh, because they're skewering the left. I don't know that they are. I think they're skewering the censorship that you can't ask questions in those situations. They're saying, yes, these are sensitive situations, and no, you cannot talk about them. Here it is.
Oh my gosh, whose baby is that?
Excuse me? It's ours.
Wait, but how?
Okay, I'm sorry, but gay people can't have a baby?
Yeah, but like, where did it come from?
Excuse me?
Excuse me?
Wow, you are not allowed to talk like that.
That is so invasive.
Okay, but like, we were with you last night and you did not have a baby.
Yeah, and you guys said that after dinner you were going to go to a rave called Bulge Dungeon, and now today you have a baby.
What we're asking is, how did this happen?
Okay, I'm sorry. Why is it when it's us, an interrogation, I don't ask you why you're poor?
I loaned you $10,000.
I think we're just wondering who the mother is.
Hey, well, between the two of us, I'm more emotional, and I like shopping, so me, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, I have long hair, and he is an alcoholic, so I guess it's like two moms, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Guys! guys, how did you get this baby?
Okay, we didn't pull it out of your vagina, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. People think they can ask gay people anything. It's not okay.
Yeah, we don't ask you guys whose butt you use for anal.
Okay. I mean, I guess what's confusing us is you never mentioned that you were having a baby, so this feels pretty sudden.
Yeah, because it wasn't planned. Sometimes it's an accident.
How does a gay couple have a baby by accident?
What do you want us to say, that we stole her?
Did you?
Well, we like to think of it as she stole us.
So does that mean yes?
Why are you confused? English is my eighth language, and even I know what that expression means.
What other languages do you speak?
You can't ask me that! Wow. The transphobia is real.
What? I'm so sorry. Is one of you a trans man?
No. No, 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 no. You cannot just ask that girl. But no. God, they should come up with a word for when people have a phobia towards homos.
Do you mean homophobia?
I literally speak eight languages and I've never heard that word.
Okay, you need to tell us which eight.
English, French, AP French, Navi, Simlish, Blackish, Groanish, and singing.
Where is your baby from?
Us!
But how did you get it?
It? You mean she, they, until he tells us otherwise.
The idea is that we can manufacture here in America. As I said, I saw Panasonic, you know, the battery company, right? Japanese company. They built an amazing factory in Kansas, which they're opening now. They put it in the ground when Donald Trump was the president. It's just finishing now. 4,000 new jobs built from what they made deals with the community colleges nearby and all the local community and the local university. They trained people for this. 4,000 high-tech jobs in Kansas. That is what's coming back to America. You're going to see that production, that kind of high-tech factory is going to produce things here at very reasonable prices. So I think this is going to work out. Plus, our farmers are going to finally have access to the world's markets. You know, our farmers have never had the opportunity to sell corn in India. So what's going to happen is as they sell more and more products, prices will come down.
I mean, Mr.
More
Secretary,
it's lower prices. You're going to see lower prices in America on lots of different products.
Okay, that's Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary. How much, Brad, do you think that Trump controls the messaging of the people who go out speaking on behalf of the administration?
Man, it doesn't sound like he controls them a lot. I think that he has a general idea of where he wants to go, but he kind of lets... He seems to have almost a laissez-faire style of leadership when it comes to that. It's like, all right, I put you in charge to do this, so you go do this.
Yeah, it seems to me like you ever seen the show Curb Your Enthusiasm? That's not a super scripted show. It's a partially scripted show. Mm-hmm. So they would come into a scene, and they would know generally where they wanted to go with the scene, but how they got there, they didn't completely know. And that, to me, is what it looks like Trump does with his cabinet, is he says, here's generally the direction that we're going, but he's not policing what they're out there saying 100% of the time. I don't think that that's his leadership style. He definitely wants people to be on the same page as him, but he doesn't. I don't think he's a micromanager, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I pulled this article up because, as you know, I'm a fan of Howard Lutnick. I like that he does things creatively. Some of these ideas that we're hearing about that seem pretty big, they seem to have originated from Howard Lutnick. One of them being the gold card.
Yeah.
The pay $5 million and you can be a legal green card / gold hard card holder. That seems to have originated from him. And then the president decides whether or not he likes it. Another one is the no income tax under $150,000. That's a Howard Lutnick idea that he was pushing that seems like Trump seems to be on board with. But I'm seeing more and more, doesn't mean it's true, but I'm seeing more and more people say that he, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, and Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary, are like warring factions. The angel and the devil sitting on Trump's ear saying opposite things.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I'm seeing that. Kind of like Lutnick is the one saying, hey, we should use tariffs to fund the United States and cut income tax. And Besant's like, we can't do that. It won't work. We use tariffs as leverage and get better deals so that people aren't ripping us off.
Yeah, yeah. And so I actually think that if that's true, that's probably a good thing, that you'd hear two different perspectives on them constantly, kind of battling it out and saying, here's where I think this will go. And the other one going, no, here's where I think this will go. And seeing if you can find the best. In fact, that actually seems like Trump's style.
It is.
Is to bring in multiple advisors with multiple points of view on big issues and say, let me hear what you got. And then picking the best. I actually like that. I don't know that the fighting is true. That's what I'm concerned about, is that there's like infighting going on and that there's more palace intrigue than we think there is. I don't know that that's true. This is from Yahoo News, so take it for what it's worth. But it says that inside the White House, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick has been perhaps the biggest proponent of Liberation Day, President Donald Trump's promised unveiling of sweeping new tariffs on Wednesday. This was a couple weeks ago now. But as the day nears, the potential fallout from those tariffs may well liberate Lutnick from his role in the administration. So they're trying to cause division that I'm not sure is actually there, even if there is a little bit of friction on both sides. Now, one of the things that I find very intriguing is that all of these people are really, we've talked about this, they're really good at doing media. So when they go out there, I do believe that they have a pretty long leash on what they can say. And one of the things that Lutnick said over the weekend was that, yes, we're going to pause some of the tariffs on the electronics from China, but it's just a pause. And people went, oh, what do you mean? Like, it's more chaos. And I don't think that that's really a bad, not the chaos, but I don't think that it's really a bad thing to have these people out there speaking and saying what the president is already communicating. I don't think that these things are outside the bounds of what the president is already saying. I don't get the hard reaction when somebody comes out on behalf of the president and says something contrary to what you want to hear.
Well, the reason that they came out hard against that is because they said that's going to roil the markets again.
So it was going to go up, but now it's not because you said it's not.
Now temporary. You're saying, oh, no, the tariffs aren't gone. It's going to come back, and that builds uncertainty, and there's all of this other stuff, which I get. There, you know, I mean, today I've been watching the Dow's green. It's 46.57 right now. The Dow's been doing fine. But I also understand, too, why a Lutnick would come out and say, nah, I don't know that these aren't, like, I don't know that this is just a pause and not permanent. And the reason being is if you're going to use it as a negotiation tactic, one of the things that has to be out there is the threat that they will come back if we don't get the deal that we want. That's how leverage works.
And that's all Lutnick was doing.
Yeah.
Is he's going out there and he's saying, yes, we're going to pause them, but this isn't forever.
But a lot of the uproar and the outrage is from people on the left because they're just looking for anything that they can do to hit this administration. For whatever reason, they don't want this administration to succeed.
It's interesting because when I was looking into this weekend, the relationship between the president and Besant and Lutnick, it recalled a time not too long ago. The relationship between Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Vivek Ramaswamy was supposed to be the co-chair of Doge.
Mm-hmm.
That did not last.
No.
So it makes me think that maybe there is truth. Maybe there is some friction inside the walls of the White House over this stuff. Again, I hope it's good friction. I hope it's not just personalities clashing. The media is going to write what they're going to write. It's unfortunate you can't really believe what they're writing because they have such an agenda. So you don't really know. Are they really fighting or are they just presenting different points of view? We talked about the different personalities in the Trump administration who have come from media. This is interesting because we've never really seen this before. But I have a list here of pretty much everybody who's in the cabinet or on the Trump team who's come from media, a lot of them from Fox Media. Now, I'm going to read some of these, and they're not, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, for instance, technically was a Fox correspondent for a while.
Yeah.
So she's on the list, but she didn't come to fame by being a Fox correspondent.
Right. But
so,
messaging is part of being.
Messaging is part of it. But I hesitate to bring her into the conversation because there's a lot of people like her who became part of the media, but it's because they were already doing something else.
Right.
So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But I'm going to read a list here. Dan Bongino, Deputy Director of the FBI.
Yes.
Clearly a media personality. Tammy Bruce.
Yes.
We know Tammy Bruce. State Department spokesperson. We haven't been able to talk to her as much
Still
recently.
Still working on trying to reach out.
Working. I mean, once you take a job in the administration, things change.
Yeah.
Monica Crowley, State Department Chief of Protocol. I don't remember her. I remember the name.
I know her.
Sean Duffy, obviously. Yep. Secretary of Transportation. Now, he's tricky, too, because he was a representative, but then he rose to more fame.
He did a lot on Fox.
By being on Fox. Now he's Secretary of Transportation. Tulsi Gabbard, we just mentioned. Sergio Gore. Do you remember that name?
No.
Director of the Presidential Personnel Office. Had something to do with Fox News or Fox Business. Sebastian Gorka. Know that name?
Oh, yeah.
Richard Grinnell.
Yep.
But he came up in politics, too. I wouldn't say he's like strictly a media personality. Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Yeah.
Now, she's the ambassador to Greece, apparently. Didn't know that. She's another one who, she probably got the job at Fox because she was already in politics, not vice versa. Pete Hegseth, for sure, was a media personality. He is now Secretary of Defense. Tom Holman is on the list. Border czar. But again, he came up through politics. Mike Huckabee came up through politics. Keith Kellogg is on the list. We've talked to Keith Kellogg many times, even recently. Great interview. Special envoy for Ukraine and Russia. Dr. Marty Makary, Food and Drug Administrator Commissioner. You familiar with that name?
Oh, yeah. He's been on our show.
Has he? I thought that sounded familiar. A few others just to get to here before we get to the point. Leo Terrell. Have we talked to him before?
I haven't had him on yet.
Senior Counsel, the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights. Mike Waltz, National Security Advisor, was on Fox. And then Scott Bessent, Secretary of the Treasury, who we were just talking about, had appeared on Fox Business as a subsidiary of Fox News, but was never actually employed.
Right.
So that's most of the list. There's a few others in there that you might not recognize the names as much of. But my question for you, Brad, is do you think that the Trump administration has selected these people as a primary function that they can talk to the media?
I think messaging is huge and controlling the message is huge. And I think that they understood that coming into this, we were going to face adversarial media, and not just adversarial, but like extreme adversarial media. We can't rely on the media to give us good coverage. So what we need to do is have people that can get out there that can fight and that can get our message through even against this adversarial media. So yeah, I think this is part of the thing that made them appealing to the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, is to get people in there that can basically not just come up with the ideas, but clearly articulate the ideas in the plan.
Do you think there's any problem with doing this?
With having people that can talk to the people of the United States?
With people who came almost strictly from media.
Depends on if they've got the background in the area to do it. I mean, like, I know everybody's like, oh, Pete Hegseth, he served in the military. He served in a combat capacity. He absolutely has the chops to do the job. He understands what it's like from that perspective. He hasn't been gone through the military machine, so to speak, the politics of climbing the ladder to get to be that four-star, five-star general. Four-star, I think, is where they're at now. But I think I don't think that it matters provided they have at least some experience in that area.
I like that these people are not part of that machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually probably one of the reasons that Trump is picking them, is that they can communicate. They are not part of that machine. They're outsiders, and they're going to come in and reform things. I think that's one of the primary reasons. The one, though, that I don't think gets any attention for the reason that we're a little bit past this. I mean, most of these people have been confirmed.
Right.
We're still going through confirmations.
Uh-huh.
Apparently in the Senate, this stuff takes forever. But the one reason that I think Trump has picked a lot of these people that people don't talk about much is that they all, because they're in media, are on public record with their opinions. So they all have been out there sharing exactly what they believe, hopefully in their area of expertise, but probably in a lot of other areas too, so that Trump can look at their record publicly and say, yes, you're an outsider. Yes, you may have not have done this thing before, but I know exactly where you stand on that. I know exactly where you stand on the issues that would be affecting your agency. And I know where you would stand on me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's part of it, is that they're out there talking about Trump. And for the last 4 years, You had plenty of opportunity, especially in 2021 and 22, to take a lot of shots at Trump if you wanted to. And if they didn't, that would say something about their belief in that that guy actually does know what he's talking about, or he's a good leader, he's a good president. So I think that gets overlooked quite a bit as to the loyalty that these people showed, even if they didn't know that that's what they were doing, because he had so much disloyalty in the first term.
That was rough.
That I really believe that that's been a key to him picking a lot of these people is their public comments. We are the Manny Fry Show. We are going to take a short break and come back with the results of the YouTube live chat poll. Do you feel safe in 2025? And I'm kind of talking about crime here. You're feeling safer? You're feeling less safe? You feel about the same? You know, political violence seems to be on the rise. I'd like to know what you think. Let us know in the YouTube live chat poll. We'll be right back.
Ethan's in too. Can we throw that out there?
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ethan's in two.
Had to be made known, made clear.
Ethan's in two. He's going to give us the results of the poll at the end of this segment. But I do want to ask you, are the Blues going to make the playoffs?
God, I hope so. Really suck.
88% chance
really
that they
suck
do, right?
They
just got to win one game.
It'd really suck if they didn't after, you know, they like won 12 in a row. And
wouldn't
like
that
got
be
to this
amazing?
Point. That would be one of the all-time terrible letdowns.
Gosh.
Sports history.
What is it? They got to win one or Calgary's got to lose one?
It's so right now the Blues have one game remaining. Calgary has two. We are right now 2 points ahead of them. For those that don't know, you get 2 points for a win in hockey. So the good thing, though, is that if the Blues win tonight,
in regulation,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
You get 2 points if you win in overtime.
Okay.
If they win tonight, they have it locked. They control their own destiny still. If they lose, they still have a pretty good chance of getting in because Calgary plays two very good teams in their final two games of the season, and the Blues, as of now, hold the tiebreaker, which is the first one is regulation wins. They have that tiebreaker right now. So the odds are still good. If they were to win both games and the Blues were to lose tonight, then the tiebreaker, I think, would shift to Calgary. So the odds
are the only way they could make it.
Correct.
Calgary.
Yes, is if the Blues lose and they win both games and they were to pick up the tiebreaker.
However, those two teams that Calgary is playing have already made the playoffs?
Correct. They've already made the playoffs.
So they have nothing to gain.
So there is a chance that they could be resting guys. But listen, in hockey, you only have so many spots to rest guys.
Yeah.
So you're still going to be getting the large part of the best of the Vegas Golden Knights and the Los Angeles Kings.
Man.
So the easy answer is if the Blues win tonight, they're in.
So just win.
Correct.
And who do they play tonight?
The Utah Hockey Club.
Utah, that's right. That's
Utah
right.
Hockey Club. I hate that name.
Yeah, and it's funny because I like St. Louis City, like, which is just a you know, very standard.
It's a very soccer-y name.
Yeah.
They had some options. They threw out some options for their fans.
Utah did?
A while ago. Like, what would you prefer? And the one that won was the Utah Yetis, which I thought sounded
would
awesome.
Would have been great.
But
what'd they do?
It got the company Yeti wouldn't allow it. I guess there was some sort of
copyright issue.
Yeah, copyright.
They don't own the word. That's crazy. But I guess they were avoiding litigation ahead of time.
Something like that. I believe that is what happened.
Oh, man. Wow. Well,
I never want to buy
now,
a Yeti product again.
If they lose, they would be losing to the Utah Hockey Club, which was formerly the Arizona Coyotes, a team that the Blues have traditionally had issues beating. So
it just makes me nervous because it's been such a great run. And if there's so few games left that that scenario could play out now. But it says, look, I'm looking at MoneyPuck right now.
88.9%. Yep. And I think Calgary's at like 13%.
I was in a meeting with a bunch of people this morning, and Tom Ackerman was in there, and I said, he obviously knows more about this than I do, but I said, according to MoneyPuck, right now the Blues have a 1.1% chance of winning the Stanley Cup. That seems like pretty good odds. That's what he said. He goes, man, that's pretty good bet to take. Because if you're a hot team, which the Blues have been up until the last couple of games, you know, usually that's what you like going into the playoffs. And 1.1% chance of even of winning the Stanley Cup seems like you could win some money on that.
Potentially, yeah. I don't know. I would be surprised if it ends up happening. It's going to be a tough track. The Blues are not there yet. They have made great strides, but they're not there yet. Some of these guys that are still really young and starting to make good impact, they're only going to get better. I would say there's a chance that this window, potentially depending on how this offseason goes, the window could officially open for, the Blues are a real competitor for next season.
Well, is anybody thinking about next season right now, though?
No, no one's thinking about next year, but I think it should get you excited about the future that, you know, the last couple of years, not gonna lie, they've kind of sucked for as Blues fans.
Yeah, it has.
It's been a rough year, but for them to be back here quicker than I think most people expected, I think is
they play tonight or tomorrow night?
They play tonight. Wait, is it Monday or Tuesday?
Today's Monday.
It's Monday.
It's Monday. They play tomorrow.
You kept saying tonight. Sorry. Are they for sure, if they make the playoffs, are they for sure playing Winnipeg?
No.
Almost. Not for sure. It depends on what happens
Montreal.
With Minnesota and Minnesota's last game.
Okay.
But the odds are is that they would play Winnipeg. And honestly, I would rather play Winnipeg.
It's either Winnipeg or the Golden Knights, correct?
Correct.
We might as well get a Cardinals update from you while you're here.
The Cardinals had a great weekend. Defeated the Philadelphia Phillies in 2 of 3 games. Phillies, it's not even really arguable at this point. They're a top 5 team in baseball. Mm-hmm. Very good offense. The two pitchers that they beat, both former Cy Young winners. That's very encouraging. The offense looked really solid. But the pitching, which has been the biggest concern early in the year, looked very sharp for the Cardinals. Miles Michaelis looked decent. They had 2 shutouts against the top 5 offense in baseball.
Yeah.
Really encouraging, because that was a concern through the first couple of weeks, is the pitching and looked great at times.
Their bats seem to be better overall than I was expecting.
Yeah, they are.
Because they were in fire sale mode. Like, you didn't think that they were going to have this kind of offense, right?
No, and the thing about this offense that people had said is there'd been some potential with some of these guys, but no one had really put it all together.
They're kind of streaky.
Yeah, the pitch selection in the past has not been great. Last year, hitting with runners in scoring position was a huge issue. They have heavily improved on a lot of areas that they have struggled in the past. And I think you have to give a lot of credit to their new hitting coach, Brant Brown, who came from Seattle last year. The approach has worked. They're taking better at bats, and they're doing a really good job scoring runs this year.
What's his mantra? There's a time to slug and a time to hit?
There's a time to hit and there's a time to slug. Basically, meaning sometimes you have to shorten up, you have to put the ball in play. Baseball has become so much about power, strikeouts, and walks. And sometimes you have to be able to put the ball in play and find ways to make small ball work, whether it be advancing runners, scoring runs in different ways. Cardinals have done a really good job of that. The offense has been an entertaining product to start the year.
I am finding a silver lining in the fact that everybody was dogging on them so hard in the offseason. And it's that things aren't actually that bad. I mean, I don't know what the season ends up. I have no idea, obviously. It's kind of like we're talking about with Trump. Like, he's trying all this stuff and everybody's down on it. But hey, wait a minute. Let's see. The Cardinals, I've been to 2 games already this year, which I didn't expect. And had a blast going to the games. It's like I forgot how much I enjoyed going to baseball games because the news has been so negative that actually watching the games on TV and listening to them on the radio, I'm like, oh, we're just playing baseball again. A team, and they're like doing okay. They're not killing it every night, but they're in contention.
I hope that as the team continues to perform, if they continue to perform like they have, I hope that people understand that It really is. I mean, I think they're 8-9 right now is their record. I don't know. They're a game under 500. But it really has been entertaining to watch. I've enjoyed watching games early this season, and I hope that fans, even though they have their frustrations with ownership and how the front office has gone about it the last several years, I hope that fans can look at the quality of play and say, hey, this is a good product. These guys are doing everything that they can to win. They care about the product. That's been made very clear in interviews and through the media that the numbers as far as attendance goes increase as we get into the summer.
Yeah, I do too. My kids and I went on Friday night, and it was a good game. There were no major fireworks until the end of the game when they actually fire off fireworks. But it was just a 2-0 game, mm-hmm. and it was just a tense game. They put a lot of runners in scoring position, didn't capitalize much, but the pitching was good enough to hold it off, and it was a fun game.
But against a really good pitcher, too.
And we talk about this stuff so much that it was good to take a step back and walk through Ballpark Village with my kids and just walk into the stadium. And if you forget, taking a kid to a baseball game is a fantastic experience. And look, I'm not paid by the Cardinals. I'm not trying to advertise the call. I'm just saying, taking my 10-year-old and my 7-year-old to a Cardinals game, they were in awe. It's not that they'd never been to a game. It's that we go to a game or two a year, and this was their time to go.
Mm-hmm.
And walking through Busch Stadium, they are like, wow, this is amazing. And they're looking and like, that's cotton candy. That's a machine right there. You get cotton candy yourself. Like, they're amazed by everything.
It's magic. Just,
yeah. It's all of the experience that goes into a baseball game that I forgot how much I enjoy. And actually, that whole area, Ballpark Village, is really kind of a fun place where they have the little mm-hmm. fake field there and the kids run the bases after the game. And just stuff like, I forgot how fun it is. And I just thought that was important to share because I know their attendance is like really not where it should be. But shoot, we had a great time. And if they're in contention, it's even better.
People will follow wins. If they continue to win, people will show up and they'll start getting more and more.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, they've added a lot of stuff this season as far as trying to make the fan entertainment system better. Yeah, they're adding DJs on, I think, on Friday nights now at Ballpark Village. They're having a concert series throughout the summer. So I think
I'll probably avoid that.
I think they're just trying to keep people around. Like, the last couple of years, it's been quiet on weekends at Ballpark Village. That's kind of the selling point, right? Is that you go hang out, go get some drinks, go listen to live music. That's a great selling point. And fans have been so frustrated that they have no interest in hanging around. But nothing is going to sell, as Brad said, like wins.
Other than wins.
So
you're there to see baseball.
You got to win.
If the product is good, then the fans will show up. They appreciate good baseball. They appreciate entertaining baseball. So let's hope that it's a better summer than initially expected in St. Louis.
We haven't answered this question yet. It's the YouTube live chat poll of the day. Do you feel safe in 2025? People going, well, I need more context. Well, my context for answering this question is, do you feel like things have gotten more dangerous in this year versus previous years? The options that you could choose here, I'm feeling safer, I'm feeling less safe, or I feel about the same. Brad, do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah, I do. It's weird because I look at this and I go, I think that we're moving in the right direction. But when I vote, I feel about the same. And the reason I vote, I feel about the same is because there's just enough crazies on the other side that says, even though this administration is working toward making things safer, people are irrational right now. So I feel about the same. I think that there's a better chance of these people getting caught, but I feel about the same.
Yeah, I'm not too far off from you. I would say I feel about the same, except that if I had to lean, I'd lean the opposite direction to you. You know, the news, if you drive a Tesla, I don't. I'd be looking over my shoulder the whole time.
That's a good point.
But that kind of stuff is it makes me at least see that there's maybe a perception that things are not as safe. I don't know if that's actually true, if the crime stats would bear that out. But there looks to be more acceptance and more push for political violence, which makes me overall less safe.
Yeah, I agree. I would say I feel about the same. I think depending on different areas of the country that you live in, you'd probably be, if we were down in farther south or in a city, maybe we're saying reacting to this differently. But I think here in my location.
Driving a Cybertruck in downtown Chicago? I don't know. Yep,
not necessarily. Okay, here we go. The results of today's YouTube live chat poll. Do you feel safe in 2025? 187 votes. Thank you to everyone that voted today. 45% agree with all three of us and say they feel about the same. 44% say that they feel safer. And just 10% saying they feel less safe this year.
Oh, okay. So it's a skewed to the safer side. I guess that's good. Well, this is the Manny Fry Show, and we will see you tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.